nice to have you with us today. On our program today, we will be continuing with an ongoing series on vaccinations, a second opinion. Today, part 5 in that continuing saga. I'm going to be quoting today from the Vaccine Reaction, the Spring and Summer 2000 edition, edited by Budlow Fisher, from the National Vaccine Information Center, also from the, I'll be quoting from the Congressional Quarterly, the November 1999 Society of Professional Journalism publication, as well as my own in-depth investigation into this issue. This has been an ongoing investigation, taking years to examine all the relevant evidence. The question is being asked, straight and simple, are vaccines safe and effective? And if so, what is the routine that we should have? Are we being under-vaccinated, over-vaccinated? Have the vaccines been tested thoroughly before being used on the population? Most people simply assume that when they get a vaccine, that there are no major complications. There may be some minor ones occasionally. That's to be expected, but when you look at the larger good of how many people are benefited by being protected by major diseases they otherwise would succumb to, it's a small price to pay. That's been the official line. But is it true? The connection between vaccination and autistic behavior, first reported in DPT, A Shot in the Dark, by Budlow Fisher and Harris Coulter 15 years ago, now being discussed in medical literature, has finally entered the U.S. public arena after simmering for more than a decade. This enhanced public awareness has been fueled by persistent reports by parents in the United States, Canada, and Europe that their children were healthy, bright, and happy until they received one or more vaccines and then descended into the isolated, painful world of autistic behavior marked by chronic immune and neurological dysfunction, including repetitive and uncontrollable behavior. Conservative estimates are that about 500,000 Americans are autistic, but that number is growing daily, with the new evidence that perhaps 1 in 150 children are suffering from autistic spectrum disorders that can include a range of neurological, behavioral, and immune system dysfunction. In 1999, as states revealed skyrocketing rates of autistic spectrum disorder among children, and a congressional hearing was held in the U.S. Congress, the media began to explore the medical controversy in print and broadcast reports. At the heart of the debate stand a few courageous physicians whose independent, multidisciplinary approach to investigating the possible biological mechanisms of vaccine-induced autism is serving as a counterweight to the steadfast denials by infectious disease specialists and government health officials defending current mass immunization or vaccine policies. As scientific evidence reveals that a portion of autism lies on the vaccine injury spectrum, parents determined to find help for their children are turning to doctors exploring diet and immune modulating therapies. Parents of now-grown vaccine-injured children who warned pediatricians and Center for Disease Control officials in the mid-1980s that their once healthy, bright children regress mentally, emotionally, and physically after receiving the DPT vaccine with fever, high-pitched screaming, encephalitic cry, collapse, shock, and seizures are grieving with a new generation of parents whose healthy, bright children suddenly regress after receiving the DPT DTaP, MMR, Hepatitis B, polio, Hib, and chickenpox vaccinations. The refusal 2 decades ago by vaccine manufacturers, government health agencies, and medical organizations to seriously investigate reports of vaccine-associated brain injury and immune system dysfunction, including autistic behavior, is reaping tragic consequences today. Now parents of old and young vaccine-injured children in the United States and Europe are joining with enlightened doctors in a rejection of the unscientific, a priori assumption that a child's mental, physical, and emotional regression after vaccination is only coincidental, but not causally related to the vaccines recently given. They are calling for credible basic science research into the biological mechanisms of vaccine adverse events to develop pathological profiles which will separate health problems caused by vaccines from those that are not. The development of screening techniques to identify children at genetic or other biological risks of developing vaccine-induced health problems. The institution of informed consent protections and vaccine laws, re-examining of vaccine licensing standards, and the end of a one-size-fits-all vaccine policy. This while the U.S. government, the pharmaceutical industry, and international corporate interests announced on March 2nd, year 2000, the creation of a new multi-billion dollar alliance called the Millennium Vaccine Initiative to vaccinate all the world's children with existing and new vaccines, including those being targeted for accelerated development for AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. According to the annual National Institutes of Health Jordan report, there are more than 200 vaccines in various stages of research. Dozens are under consideration for childhood use. Even as the race to add new vaccines to the routine child vaccine schedule rushes forward, parents whose children became autistic after receiving existing vaccines are changing the direction of autism research and the vaccine safety debate. Let's take a look now at the increase in autism reflected through real increases in childhood chronic dietary or childhood diseases and disorders. The incidence of autism, like that of learning disabilities, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, asthma, diabetes, arthritis, chronic fatigue syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, and other autoimmune and neurological disorders, has risen dramatically in the United States and other technologically advanced countries. While high vaccination rates have caused the incidence of childhood infectious diseases to fall just as dramatically in those countries, instead of epidemics of infectious disease, there are now epidemics of chronic disease. The University of California study, published by the U.S. Department of Education in 1996, found that, quote, the proportion of the U.S. population with disabilities has risen markedly during the past quarter century. This recent change seems to be due not to demographics, but to greater numbers of children and young adults reported as having disabilities, unquote. The study concluded that, quote, these changes may be partly accounted for by the increases in the prevalence of asthma, mental disorders, mental retardation, and learning disabilities that have been noted among children in recent years. After heart disease and cancer, autoimmune disease has become the third leading cause of illness in the United States and in many technologically advanced countries. According to the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, the autoimmune disease, asthma, is now, quote, the most common disorder in children and adolescents, affecting nearly 5 million children under the age of 18, including an estimated 1.3 million children under the age of 5. 50 to 80% of children affected with asthma develop symptoms before they're 5 years of age, unquote. A 1997 study published in Science found that asthma has doubled in prevalence in Western societies during the past 20 years, and in the United States causes one-third of pediatric emergency room visits. A 1995 report by the Center for Disease Control stated that between 1982 and 1992, asthma increased 52% for persons 5 to 34 years of age, and asthma deaths, they increased 42%. Another autoimmune disorder, arthritis, is already, quote, on a steady rise, according to the CDC in 1998, which estimated that arthritis now plagues more than 40 million Americans and projected that the number will grow to 60 million by 2020. Cases of diabetes, yet another chronic autoimmune disorder, has tripled in the U.S. since 1958, now affecting nearly 16 million Americans and ranking fourth in leading causes of death in America. The CDC concluded in 1997 that, quote, the number of newly diagnosed cases of diabetes was almost 50% higher in 1994 than in 1980, unquote, and did not appear to be the result of the aging of the population. In Europe, a new report issued over there and published in Lancet evaluated the incidence rates of diabetes from 1989 to 94 in Europe and Israel and found a 63% increase in children under 5 years of age, a 31% increase in children 5 to 9 years of age, a 24% increase in children 10 to 14. They said, quote, the rapid rate of increase in children with diabetes under 5 years of age is a particular concern, unquote. Now, there's no explanation for why adult onset diabetes, once extremely rare in children, has become more prevalent in American children in the past 10 years. In addition to unexplained increase in autoimmune disorders during the past 3 decades, there's also been an unexplained dramatic increase in the numbers of minimally brain-damaged children who are filling special education classes all over the country. A disability survey of U.S. children under 17 years of age in 1992, published in the Mortality and Morbidity Weekly Report, August 25, 1995, stated that, quote, 6 to 14-year-old age groups had the greatest number of disabled people, unquote. Learning disability led the way, occurring in nearly 30% of all disabled children. A total of 1,435,000 children were listed as learning disabled, and another 1,446,000 children reported as suffering from speech disorders, mental retardation, mental or emotional disorders, epilepsy, and autism. The 1997 Digest of Education Statistics looked at children ages 0 to 21 years of old, served in federally supported programs for the disabled from 1976 to 96, and found that the number of children with specific learning disabilities more than tripled in those years. Those with serious emotional disturbances nearly doubled, and the number of autistic children rose from 5,000 in 1991 to 39,000 in 1996 to produce a staggering 680% increase. About 5% of U.S. children, that's over 2 million, are now estimated to have attention deficit disorder. According to the Sears and Thompson report, a 1990 survey of 2,400 practicing physicians showed that there were about 2 million patient visits associated with diagnosis of ADD in 1994. It had increased substantially by 90% in just a short period of time, resulting in drug therapy. By 1995, there were 1.5 million children taking Ritalin. And in a recent study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, it was reported that the number of 2 to 4-year-olds taking prescription drugs like Ritalin and Prozac had risen 50% from 1991 to 95. According to one National Institute of Health official, 40% of children diagnosed with ADHD have learning disabilities, and about 70% of children who had ADHD also have conduct disorder involving delinquent behavior. In his 1990 book, Vaccinations, Social Violence, and Criminality, medical historian Dr. Harris Coulter expands on the evidence he and Barbara Lowe Fisher first presented in DPT, A Shot in the Dark, and draws parallels between the residual learning disabilities and hyperactive abnormal behavior caused by complications of disease or vaccine-induced encephalitis and hyperactive abnormal behavior and learning disabilities exhibited by more and more American children. Many children with learning disabilities, ADHD, and developmental delays exhibit signs of autoimmune dysfunction with severe allergies to foods, drugs, and environmental toxins. Responding to the concern of a dad whose healthy son became autistic following a series of DPT, Hib, and MMR vaccines, in 1998, the California legislature decided to analyze the history of autism in the state. Rick Rollins, father of two, former Secretary of California Senate, and co-founder of Families for Early Autism Treatment, and the University of California, Davis, and Mind Institute persuaded the legislator to fund an investigation by the California Department of Developmental Services. Russell, he concluded his son, Russell, now nine, was not the victim of a rare disorder, but one that had become quite common in children. What is that? An adverse effect of the vaccine. Sure enough, in April of 1999, in a report, DDS found 273% increase between 1987 and 98 in the numbers of new children entering the California Developmental Services System with a professional diagnosis of autism. The report concluded that, quote, the number of persons with autism grew markedly faster than the number of persons with other developmental disabilities, such as cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and mental retardation. And, quote, compared to characteristics of 11-year-olds, the present population of persons with autism are younger and have a greater chance of exhibiting no or milder forms of mental retardation, unquote. Now, although autism has been cited by public health officials and autistic researchers to occur in 2 to 10 in 10,000 children nationwide, the Center for Disease Control, in a report released in April 2000, found the incidence of autism in Brick Township, New Jersey, in 1998, to be 1 in 150 children. Now, mind you, we're told that it's 2 children in 10,000, and then we find in Brick Township it's 1 in 150. The incidence in the Granite State, California Public Elementary School District was 1 in 132, which may be more reflective of the true rate of autism in the United States today. The Autism Society of America estimates that more than 500,000 people in the United States today have autism, or some form of pervasive developmental disorder, unquote, making autism one of the most common developmental disabilities. And after the California report documented dramatic increases in autism in the past decade, the California legislature voted to appropriate $1 million to the University of California, Davis Mind Institute to look for environmental and biological factors, including vaccine use. The story is the same in other states. In 1998, Maryland's special education census data revealed that the state experienced a 513% increase in autism between 1993 and 98, while the general Maryland population from 1990 to 98 increased just 7%. A comparative analysis of the 16th and 20th annual reports to Congress on the implementation of the Individuals with Disability Education Act, conducted by Ray Gallup, president of Autism Autoimmunity Project, and father of Eric, who has vaccine-associated autism, showed increases of more than 300% in autistic children served under IDA between 97. The states of Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Delaware, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Mexico, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Vermont, and Washington. We cannot blame this on bad parenting. It's not. And unfortunately, what has happened in the past, we've tried to look for the easy out. We cannot blame it upon lower IQ. It's not. And we have to look at what is actually happening. And I believe that what is happening here and what we have not paid attention to is that in a completely trusting manner, we have accepted whatever we've been told about vaccines. As a result, we have more vaccines than ever before. By 1979, a combination live virus, measles, mumps, rubella, MMR vaccine, which was licensed in 1971, had been added to the routine child vaccination schedule and given to children 12 to 15 months of age. Federal grants were being given to states to provide free DPT, polio, and MMR vaccines to children in public health clinics. And the CDC was encouraging states to enforce mandatory vaccination laws to raise national vaccination rates. By 1979, rubella vaccine, which had been licensed in 1969 for use in children, also began to be routinely administered to mothers in hospitals after giving birth. In 1988, CDC added hemophilus influenza, or B, or Hib, vaccine to the child vaccine schedule. In 1991, the CDC recommended the recombinant hepatitis B vaccine to be used by all newborn infants and children. In 1993, the combined DPTH vaccine was licensed. And in 1995, the live varicella-zoster chickenpox vaccine was put on the market. In 1999, the average American child, regardless of the parent's educational level or ability to pay, was being injected with hepatitis B vaccine at 12 hours of age and 1 month, with DBT or DTaP, HIB, OPV, and IPV at 2 to 4 months, with DPT, DTaP, HIB, OPV, and IPV, and hepatitis B at 6 months, with live varicella zoster at 12 to 18 months, with MMR and HIB at 12 to 15 months, with DPT, DTaP, OPV, IPV at 18 months, and with DPT, DTaP, MMR, OPV, IPV between 4 and 6 years for a total of 33 different doses of vaccines for 10 different viral and bacterial vaccines by the age of 5. What an assault against an immune system that had not even evolved completely yet. The national vaccination rates for children under the age of 3 had climbed between 60% to 80% in 1967 for DPT, polio, measles to 90% in 1999. And for DPT, polio, MMR, and HIB vaccines, vaccine coverage rates with core vaccines for 5-year-old children entering kindergarten had reached 98% of the children in the United States. 98% were vaccinated fully by the age of 5. A vaccination today is not just a medical intervention afforded by the rich and taken advantage of by the well-educated, but an equal opportunity extended to the rich and poor, and educated and uneducated. And yet, the cases of autism in the 1940s and 50s were concentrated in the upper and upper middle classes. Today, it affects everyone. Inflammation of the brain is called encephalitis, or encephalomyelitis, or encephalopathy, and has been documented for more than 200 years in the medical literature to be caused by viral and bacterial infections, as well as the vaccines containing altered viruses and bacteria. Smallpox infections can involve brain inflammation, with symptoms ranging from fever and vomiting and drowsiness and convulsions, which progress over a period of 1 to 4 weeks, sometimes ending in coma and death. The vaccine virus used by Edward Jenner in 1796 to prevent smallpox was found to cause acute disseminated encephalomyelitis within 1 to 6 weeks of smallpox vaccination, estimated to occur in 1 in 5,000 persons. Smallpox vaccination has also been reported to cause a slow, subacute, persistent viral infection that can emerge years later after vaccination and end in death. The myelin sheath that encloses many nerve fibers helps the transmission of neural impulses, and if the myelin sheath is damaged through traumatic injury, metabolic disorders, viral bacterial infections, or vaccination, it can cause degeneration and demyelinization. Hence, your vaccination may lead to multiple sclerosis or other such conditions. Rabies, a viral disease of the central nervous system, can take 10 days to a year for the virus to reach the brain. But once it does, encephalomyelitis symptoms, including excessive motor activity, excitation, agitation, confusion, combativeness, bizarre aberrations of thought, seizures, and other central nervous system dysfunction. After Pasteur began to inject patients with rabies vaccine in the 1880s, it became obvious that the brain inflammation was a side effect. Encephalitis and polyneuritis have been estimated to occur in as many as 1 in 400 vaccinated individuals, with the hematuria griffin. In 1987, they presented evidence for an immune-mediated mechanism involving antibodies to myelin-based protein. historically, no one thought there would be side effects to rabies. Now we're seeing that all of these conditions in the brain are due to the rabies vaccine. Measles and EEG and behavioral changes have also been shown. Within 3 weeks of a child being injected with a mild measles, within 3 weeks of even a mild measles infection, 1 in 1,000 cases can develop encephalomyelitis with signs including fever, headache, and drowsiness. Residual brain damage from measles encephalitis ranges from mental and behavioral changes, including subtle changes in performance, to seizure disorders and mental retardation. Changes in the electroencephalogram, the EEG, have been demonstrated in half of those who have had measles but do not show other signs. Now, measles virus infection has long been known to be associated with demyelinization disorders like Guillain-Barré syndrome. It's been reported following measles disease and after measles vaccination. You have optic neuritis and multiple sclerosis in children also reported after measles vaccination. And you have many cases of encephalitis occurring in the 6 to 15 days following measles vaccination. Subacute sclerosing panencephalitis is a rare subacute encephalitis complications of measles infection, which causes slow demyelinization of the brain over a 1 or 2 year period and ends in death. It's also been reported after measles vaccination. In 1994, the Institute of Medicine concluded that the live measles virus vaccine can cause death from measles vaccine strain viral infection. Now, this is not told to parents, that your child can end up having death due to the vaccination. In 1998, officials at the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, the Public Health Service, the March 1998 edition, found that a causal relationship exists between live measles vaccine and encephalopathy after analyzing cases of children who received measles vaccine alone or in the combination of MMR and the measles. Within 15 days of vaccination, they suffered neurological signs and progressed to death or mental regression or retardation, chronic seizures, motor and sensory deficits, and movement disorders. An outbreak of aseptic meningitis in Brazil had been linked to the MMR vaccine, according to the American Journal of Epidemiology. A research team found there was a sharp increase in the number of cases of aseptic meningitis 3 weeks after a 1997 mass MMR vaccination campaign in northeastern Brazil. The researchers, quote, conservatively estimated that the risk of aseptic meningitis is about 1 in 14,000 from the MMR vaccine doses. It's a type of brain inflammation involving the aseptic meningitis that can be caused by the virus and bacteria. And it's very serious and generally leads to death. Then you had the mumps, the rubella vaccine associated with brain inflammation. Mumps have been known to cause meningitis and encephalitis since the 18th century. Doctors Russell and Donald observed in 1958 that, quote, the clinical resemblance between mumps and encephalitis and the encephalitis which may follow measles and rubella and varicella, and the fact that the histological appearance of what is called perivascular demyelinization are common in them all, suggests they arise from the same pathological process. The nature of this process is known, but it may be a nonspecific allergic reaction to the virus protein, and similar lesions have been produced experimentally by the injection of brain material with adjuvants, unquote. That means a vaccine in lay language. There have been many case reports of studies documenting meningitis within 3 weeks of mumps vaccination and after MMR vaccination, and primarily with the Yerba vaccine strain virus. There have also been reports of meningitis after vaccination with the Geraldine mumps vaccine strain. Rubella disease is caused by an RNA virus, and although mild in children, it can be transmitted from mother to fetus in utero and cause encephalitis and devastating harm to the unborn child, including mental retardation, hearing and visual loss, heart and neuromuscular deformity. In the rubella epidemic that swept the United States in 1964, an estimated 30,000 children whose pregnant mothers were infected with rubella were born severely damaged with a high rate of classic and partial autism. In 1977, Dr. Chase reported that the rate of autism in children born with congenital rubella from the 1964 epidemic was equivalent to a 412%, or 412 per 10,000 for the complete syndrome of autism, which means that those mothers who had the virus or were vaccinated had a very high level of infecting their unborn child. In the 1920s, when a mini-epidemic of von Ekumano's encephalitis swept through Europe and America, doctors found that some of those who recovered were left with minimal brain damage, including changes in behavior, restlessness, insomnia, or disturbed sleep patterns, irritability, and short attention span, and emotional disorders and seizures. In 1934, Dr. Kahn and Cohen described a group of children with the inability to sit still or concentrate, which they attributed to exposure to the encephalitis. Japanese encephalitis can cause permanent brain damage, and chickenpox and mumps infections can, in rare cases, progress to encephalitis and brain inflammation. Now, again, this can all be done caused by the vaccines as well, including the poliomyelitis is caused by an enterovirus in which 1 to 2% of infected individuals develop disease in the central nervous system, and fewer go on to have residual paralysis or die. Likewise, within 1 to 6 months of receiving the live attenuated polio vaccine, complications can occur, which, according to the Institute of Medicine, can cause Guillain-Barré syndrome, as well as a vaccine strain viral infection ending in paralysis and death. In both cases, the poliovirus invades the central nervous system and destroys neurons. And since 1979, the only cases of paralytic polio ever have been caused by the live oral polio vaccine. You can also have bacteria in vaccines that can cause brain inflammation. Brain inflammation is not only caused by viruses and viral vaccines. Bacterial infections and bacterial vaccines can also cause brain inflammation, ending in permanent central nervous system damage. Encephalitis always has been the most dreaded complication of pertussis whooping cough, with endotoxin and pertussis toxin in the B. pertussis bacteria responsible for most of the damage. Pertussis toxin is one of the most lethal toxins in nature and can cause the blood-brain, cross the blood-brain barrier when conditions are right. And it's long been known that a severe case of whooping cough accompanied by brain inflammation symptoms such as fever, lethargy, vomiting, and seizures can be fatal or cause permanent brain damage ranging from seizure disorders to mental retardation. And yet, when was the last time you were warned that if you give your child that vaccine, they can end up causing this kind of damage? I'm Gary Nall, giving you part 5 of our ongoing investigative series on vaccines, a second opinion, reevaluating the statements that they're safe and necessary and should be continued as mandatory or compulsory. Now, let's look at pertussis. Since the 1950s, scientists conducting experiments have added pertussis toxins to a solution of nerve tissue and injected into sensitized mice to deliberately induce brain inflammation. However, pertussis toxin is also thought to be involved in acquiring immunity to the disease, both after natural infection and after vaccination. Vaccine developers continue to have a problem making a pertussis vaccine that contains pertussis toxin inactivated enough to be safe, but active enough to be immunogenic, which is why the purified PPP-18 vaccine is associated with the same central nervous system that patients have heard, so T PPT vaccine, although they are reported to occur at a much lower rate, but it still happens. So parents who want the purified DTaP for their children is asked for it by name. But you're still primarily giving the whole thing, and that cannot be inactivated. See, here's how it works. If you want to benefit from a small, small amount of the actual virus in order to protect your body by creating an antibody level, you have to first say, is this small child's immune system strong enough, healthy enough, non-allergenic enough, immune competent enough to withstand a direct implant? That's what you're doing. You're infusing directly intravenous of this toxin, this virus. Because we're assuming, and just think of this for a moment, we're assuming that every baby, every child in America is the same weight, they're not, the same size, they're not, their immune system is all equally capable of seeing that the virus that we're putting in them, a disease-causing microorganism we're intentionally putting in them, their body's immune system can first create an antibody to it when it comes in contact with it, destroy it, and therefore have a protective antibody that when the child is then later exposed to that toxin through something they eat or someone breathes on them, that they'll be able to have that memory through the antibodies and defeat it. Nice concept, doesn't work in reality. How many children have chronic infections? They are fed a poor diet. They're allergic to all kinds of dairy and meat and sugar that their parents frequently give them. They are exposed to environmental toxins. They're frequently overstimulated, so their immune system is not normal at all. So you take a child who does not have a healthy, well-developed immune system, and you assault it. You include a very, very lethal virus into that child's body, saying you're all the same. We are not all the same. No two children are the same. No two babies are the same. And let's say that the child already has had 20 vaccines. They started off with an impaired immune system that was chronically assaulted with other vaccines. Each time they received a vaccine, they were never given the vitamins, the minerals, the enzymes, the raw foods, the juices that would have helped them regain their immune system. Instead, they're given sugar and dairy and meat and Jell-O and candies and caffeine and electromagnetic pulses and antibiotics. So their immune system, for all intents and purposes, has been substantially compromised. So does the doctor pay attention? Does the doctor ever do any immune modulated test? Never. Never, never, never. Not one. There's not one in the whole country ever. Is that the height of insanity? Is that completely medically irresponsible? Yes, it is. And if you doubt me, ask any doctor, when was the last time you did a complete immune workup profile on a child to determine the actual current state of the child's complete immune system? And they'll say, well, we don't. It's the child's a child. They're healthy. They are? Then why do they have inner ear infection? Why do they have chronic post-nasal drip? Why do they have circles under the eyes? Why do they have antibodies to arthritis at such a young age? So now their body has been grossly, grossly assaulted at the immune level from vaccines. And what do? We give them more vaccines. We continue to further depress it. And you think, surely this couldn't be happening. We must somewhere in America have a physician who can actually think. Is there such a human being on the planet? Is there one pediatrician who can actually stop the insanity and say, my God, this is insane? The answer is no. We have no such human being. So you have to be warned of what your doctor will not do. The doctor is doing cookbook medicine like a robot, like a Manchurian medical candidate. I am told I must do this. I cannot take the time and do a medical evaluation and an immune modulation test on each patient. I must assume that every patient who comes in, no matter what their age, is going to get the same amount of the same vaccines because it's on the schedule, and I must go by the schedule. The schedule is the protocol. The protocol is what's important. We're rewarded for following orders. The orders are the protocol. Follow the protocol. What about the patient? The patient, well, if anything happens, it clearly wasn't the fault of the vaccine or the protocol or the doctor. We're in permanent denial. Push the button that says, are we responsible? We say, no. Name the doctor who admits they made a mistake and caused autism, brain damage, encephalitis, or death of a patient. Let's see who this brave soul is. But is this the fact? I'm only giving you facts cited from their literature. So you're waiting for them to be gallant, noble, do the right thing? That's like asking an NBA superstar to be humble and play for the love of the game and the respect of the sport and the joy of the fans. Nice thought, not going to happen. Signs of brain inflammation within 7 days of DPT vaccination can range from high fever, irritability, high-pitched screaming, prolonged crying for hours, drowsiness, and vomiting to seizures, collapse and unresponsiveness, altered states of consciousness, followed by immediate frank regression or progressive changes in mental, emotional, and physical health, ending with a diagnosis of mental retardation, seizure disorders, learning disabilities, and other chronic neurological damage. DPT vaccine-induced brain inflammation, the IOM noted in 1994, is associated with, quote, a broad range of long-term dysfunctions, neurological, behavior, educational, motor, sensory, and self-care dysfunctions, unquote, that are similar to those experienced by children after serious acute neurological illnesses due to other causes. A child who had been healthy and bright and engaging before he received his DPT shot went into convulsions, followed by days of fever and screaming, and left mentally retarded with autistic behaviors. Was given some compensation by the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, but no protest by federal health officials, no protest by the CDC, including doctors sitting on the CDC advisory panel who actually own patents on the vaccines they're recommending. No protests from the FDA or its advisory panel, of whom 80% work for or receive money from vaccine manufacturers. The U.S. Court of Claims made awards agreeing with the plaintiff's lawyers that autistic behaviors can be the result of brain injury, including brain injury caused by DPT vaccine. Are you told when you receive your DPT vaccine that A, it will not protect you, B, that it could cause autism? No. Has it been found in courts of law that that's the case? Yes. Has the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act paid out over $1 billion in small amounts to people who were proven to have injury from the vaccine? Yes. Then why haven't we changed the policies, changed the protocols, thrown away this particular cookbook and started over by building a child's immune system naturally? Vaccine manufacturers have too much power and control over public policy. One of the sources of information reviewed by the IOM and included in references in their 1991 report on pertussis vaccine was original research documenting more than 100 cases of DPT vaccine-associated immune-mediated neurological dysfunction contained in the DPT shot in the dark. Their book was the first to undertake an extensive examination of the history of pertussis and the pertussis vaccine within the larger context of the medical, scientific, legal, social, and political issues involving mass vaccination policies. In their book, Coulter and Fisher described numerous case reports in more than 50 years of medical literature and in new case studies that they presented of children who have been developing normally, in many cases were actually above average intelligence, and then received a DPT shot, often simultaneously with live oral polio vaccine, and then immediately exhibited symptoms of brain inflammation, including high fever, extreme drowsiness, vomiting, high-pitched screaming, seizures, alterations of consciousness. Many of these children were subsequently diagnosed as mentally retarded, epileptic, learning disabled, hyperactive, or autistic. In a good number of cases, the children who had reacted neurologically to DPT were allergic, particularly to milk, or had been vaccinated while they were sick with a coinciding viral or bacterial infection. In addition to neurological damage, many were also left with chronic gastrointestinal dysfunction, severe allergies, and autoimmune disorders like asthma. The personal or family history of autoimmune disorders appeared to outweigh a history of neurological disorders in terms of being at risk for reacting to DPT. Then you have tetanus and the HIB and how it affects the brain. The tetanus bacillus produces one of the most potent toxins in nature and can be severely damaging to the brain. In 1991, the Institute of Medicine concluded that tetanus vaccine can cause Guillain-Barré syndrome, which begins 1 to 4 weeks after vaccination and takes up to 4 weeks to progress. The tetanus vaccine was also found to cause bronchial neuritis, a neuropathy that usually appears within 3 weeks of vaccination, involving painful nerve inflammation in the arm and shoulder, which can progress over a period of months. HIB disease, a type of bacterial meningitis, is known to have a direct effect on the central nervous system and can involve seizures and profound brain damage. Although reports of demyelinization and transverse myelination have been reported after children received the HIB vaccine, which contains the HIB organism capsular polysaccharide, they still continue to give it to children. In 1935, scientists investigating the neurological complications of rabies vaccine discovered they could deliberately induce brain inflammation in lab animals by injecting them with brain myelin, causing an autoimmune reaction whereby the animal develops antibodies to its own brain tissue, causing demyelinization. The autoimmune disease diabetes, multiple sclerosis, and lupus, for example, involve chronic inflammation that causes tissue destruction, including central nervous system damage. It is thought that these diseases may be triggered by an infection that activates autoreactive T cells, and in individuals genetically susceptible to developing autoimmunity, results in chronic inflammation. Hence, it's very possible, very, very possible, that by getting the vaccines that are made with any tissue, like myelinating tissue, that you could then start an autoimmune reaction that attacks your own myelin sheath. So when we're looking at an epidemic of multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, cystic fibrosis, Parkinson's, we have never looked at vaccines as a possible cause. I suggest that we immediately pay attention to this cause. Hepatitis B also can cause autoimmunity. During the past decade, there have been persistent reports in the medical literature that within weeks of recombinant hepatitis vaccination, some children and adults are suffering recurring fevers, severe joint pain, vision and memory loss, muscle weakness, debilitating fatigue, and other chronic immune and neurological dysfunction, which can involve demyelinization of the brain. The virus that causes hepatitis B disease attacks the liver and can cause severe joint pain, fatigue, and weakness that the disease is sometimes mistaken for rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. Rare complications of hepatitis B include demyelinization, such as transverse myelinitis and neuropathy. Likewise, clinical symptoms that follow the hepatitis B vaccine that they want to make mandatory in every child in New York and New Jersey, and are doing that, unless you're wise enough to declare a religious exemption. Well, the complications of this vaccine are similar to lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, as well as optic neuritis, multiple sclerosis, that's correct, chronic fatigue syndrome, vascular disorders, such as asthma, and frequently this occurs about 10 weeks after the vaccine. In fact, Neurology, the peer-reviewed journal, 1999, concluded, quote, "The persistent inflammatory activity observed clinically and in the MRI in these patients is comparable to that usually observed in multiple sclerosis," unquote. Hypothesizing a triggering role of hepatitis B vaccination in central nervous system demyelinization. So once again, for those of you suffering from any form of central nervous system condition, autoimmune condition, what about the vaccines? And Dr. Burton Weisbrenn, medical doctor, began writing and speaking about molecular mimicry and hepatitis B vaccine reactions in 1996. Dr. Bonnie Dubar, professor of cell biology, Baylor College of Medicine, Dr. Ronald Kennedy, professor of microbiology and immunology, and William Hildenbrand, PhD, assistant professor, University of Oklahoma Health Science Center, are three scientists working to clarify the role that genetic predisposition may play in the development of immune-mediated neurological dysfunction following hepatitis B vaccination. They are studying families with several members who have been reacted severely to hepatitis B vaccine, are investigating autoimmune mechanisms involving molecular mimicry and its spreading. So it's not that this isn't happening. We're looking carefully at this. Dr. Dubar, for instance, an award-winning vaccine developer whose brother suffered a severe disabling reaction to several hepatitis B vaccinations, in particular concerning that race may be a factor in both normal and abnormal immune response to vaccines. She said, quote, "There may be variations in the way that different genetic populations respond to different vaccines, and this needs to be carefully evaluated before new vaccines are licensed and recommended for the use by everyone," unquote. Well, right now, it doesn't matter. You're Latino, Chinese, African-American. No matter what your race, you're all going to get the same vaccine. No matter what your weight, same vaccine. No matter what state of your immune system, same vaccine. No matter if you have cancer, heart disease, AIDS, same vaccine. Something sound wrong with this scenario? Yes. Hepatitis B vaccine has also been associated with diabetes. A 1996 report by Dr. Clayson in the New Zealand Medical Journal noted a 60% increase in juvenile diabetes following a massive hepatitis B vaccine campaign for babies from 1988 to 91. In 1997, the U.S. federal health officials acknowledged that one of their own studies showed that, quote, "the possibility of hepatitis B vaccination, particularly at older ages, may increase insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus. Risk cannot be ruled out and will require longer, more detailed studies," unquote. Dr. Clayson has also published studies which show an increase in diabetes in children after the addition of Hib and MMR vaccine. That was published in Infectious Disease and Clinical Practice, 1997. Then we have the pertussis, DPT, and autoimmunity. The pertussis toxin, sometimes referred to as the islet activating protein, has been shown in laboratory animals to provoke excessive production of insulin by the pancreas and diabetes in mice. In 1970, Dr. Pittman talked about DPT, quote, "vaccine-induced hypoglycemia." And in a report in 1982, Dr. Champser in the Journal of Pediatrics concluded that the administration of the DPT vaccine to a 16-month-old child with a coincidental viral infection and a genetic predisposition may lead to, quote, "insular damage and anti-islet autoimmune reactions, leading to insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus," unquote. Well, now, did anyone know about this? No. Did your pediatrician know? Yes. Was it in the published and scientific literature? Yes. Was anything done about it? No. Were you told that your child could end up with diabetes? No. Do we have an epidemic of diabetes in children? Yes. Arthritis in children? Yes. Autism in children? Yes. Minimal brain dysfunction in children? Yes. ADD in children? Yes. Has it increased more than any other disease known in the last 100 years in a specific group of children where no other condition can be associated with the increase except vaccine? Yes. Do our U.S. public health officials seem concerned? No. Are the doctors concerned? No. Nurses? No. Hospitals? No. Insurance companies? No. Who's concerned? The parents. Who cares? No one. From the earliest days of the pertussis vaccine use, it has been associated with the development of asthma. Do we have an epidemic in asthma? Is asthma killing thousands and thousands of people every year? Yes. Did we used to have asthma at this level? Never. Has anything changed that could have precipitated a greater increase in asthma? Yes. What? Vaccines. What's the proof? Comberg, 1953. Halpern and Halpern, 1955. Hopper, 1961. Hanick, 1969. All scientific published papers. In a 1997 issue of Epidemiology, New Zealand researchers reported that of 1,265 New Zealanders born in 1977, 23 received no childhood vaccinations and none suffered asthma as children. From another group of 1,242 children who did receive the DPT and polio shots, 23% later had episodes of asthma, and 23% had asthma consultations, and 30% had allergic illness. Two groups cross-matched, same number of kids, one got the vaccine, no asthma, no complications. Another group, same number, got the vaccine, 23 to 30% had asthma. In a recent study, Dr. Horwitz Morgenstern, published in the National Center for Health Statistics from 1988 to 1994, comparing vaccinated and unvaccinated children, it was found that a child who received the DPT or tetanus vaccination was 50% more likely to experience severe allergic reactions and more than 80% more likely to experience sinusitis and twice as likely to experience asthma as those children who were not vaccinated. The authors concluded that, quote, asthma and other allergic hypersensitivity reactions and related symptoms may be caused in part by the delayed effect of DPT or tetanus vaccination, unquote. I'm Gary Knoll. We're up to the end of another program. Our time flies here. I want to thank the authors, Barbara Fisher, senior editor, and the National Vaccine Information Center for their vaccine reaction special report, summer, spring of 2000, from which I've been reporting today. And I want people to understand that up to this point, you virtually have had no counterbalancing objective data from which you can challenge the state mandated compulsory vaccination of your child. I believe that it is necessary at this time to realize that the people that we have entrusted with the sole discretionary power to put toxins into our children's bodies to so-called protect them for public health interest have been wrong. And therefore, we must at least look carefully at the data. If you wish to vaccinate after that, then you're doing so from informed consent of knowing all the issues and the risks that could be potentially disadvantageous. I have not even gotten into the section of my research yet on alternatives that could protect your child. That will come on our subsequent programs. I wish you all a very good day, and I'll be back tomorrow sharing more on my special investigations.